Rich, we ready? Okay. So, welcome everybody. My name is Sue. I am a compulsive eater. I've been in how many years? This is my 18th year of sobriety. I had my birthday in June, June 15th. I love to say that I haven't had sugar, flour, eaten between a meal for 18 years. Miracle. And I'm so grateful to be here at this convention. And obviously, this is a topic that so many of us are interested in. Just to say, if there's anyone brand new to 12-step programs, any of them, and if there's anyone like really in the midst of struggling with their sobriety, there are better workshops to help you to be in the beginning phase of your recovery. So please feel free to go and do that so that you can get the support that you need to get abstinent. And that is the other workshops on back to basics and things that are happening simultaneously. This is a workshop sort of based on us that have been trudging this road, whichever road, for a little while. And after all of this time, we still need the one thing that we haven't got, which is emotional sobriety. I am a little anxious about giving this workshop because, as you can imagine, after 18 years, I can talk about abstinence, I can talk about the first three steps. I can talk about how to travel abstinent, how to be sick abstinent, how to do an inventory, but this is a phase in my life that I'm right in the middle of. There are many of you in this room who've been in all 12-step programs sober for many, many years, who have a lot more knowledge and experience of this topic. So hopefully we'll get through the little information that I've researched mostly, experienced a little bit of, and you'll be able to share your experience on this topic. So the basis of this was that they do a lot of this I've read, a lot of this I've got from other workshops that I've attended. And a lot of what I'm going to speak about is Bill W. and his relationship with emotional sobriety. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob left us with three legacies. The first one was the steps, which was to help millions and millions of people to get freedom from the substance that they used, food, alcohol, and drugs. The traditions were what helped us with our how to live in the world and emotional well-being and peace of mind around the fellowship and how we could all work together. And the third legacy they speak of is the formation of the General Service Office. After the fourth legacy is emotional sobriety, and that came after 21 years of Bill W. being in program. In 1956, he had been sober for 21 years, and he wrote a letter to a depressed friend. This great resource was to understand long-term recovery. 21 years, more than two decades, after so much work, he wanted to know why he was reacting to situations in the way that he was. He wasn't happy with the way he was relating to others and to himself. He had to sit with some discomfort while he processed this so that he could get some awareness around this issue. He sought the truth about himself, about life, and from these efforts he developed the ability to be honest with himself and identify emotional and behavioral patterns that were causing him much distress and anxiety. The letter that he wrote is a synthesis of what he had learned about himself and his dilemma after being sober for 21 years. So this is someone who read this letter. You have it, so you can follow along, and we'll play the letter.
I thank many Ulsters who have put our booze cure to severe but successful tests still find that they often lack emotional sobriety. Perhaps they will be the spearhead for the next major development in AA, the development of much more real maturity and balance, which is to say, humility, in our relations with ourselves, with our fellows, and with God. Those adolescent urges that so many of us have for top approval, perfect security, and perfect romance, urges quite appropriate to age 17, prove to be an impossible way of life when we are at age 47 or 57. Since AA began, I've taken immense wallops in all those areas because of my failure to grow up emotionally and spiritually. My God, how painful it is to keep demanding the impossible, and how very painful to discover finally that all along we had the cart before the horse. Then comes the final agony of seeing how awful awfully wrong we have been, but still finding ourselves unable to get off the emotional merry-go-round. How to translate a right mental conviction into a right emotional result, and so into easy, happy, and good living? Well, that's not only the neurotic's problem, it's the problem of life itself for all of us who have got to the point of real willingness to hew to right principles in all of our affairs. Even then, as we hew away, peace and joy may still elude us. That's the place so many AA oldsters have come to. And it's a hell of a spot, literally. How shall our unconscious, from which so many of our fears, compulsions, and phony aspirations still stream, be brought into line with what we actually believe, know, and want? How to convince our dumb, raging, and hidden Mr. Hyde becomes our main task. I've recently come to believe that this can be achieved. I believe so because I begin to see many benighted ones, folks like you and me, commencing to get results. Last autumn, depression, having no really rational cause at all, almost took me to the cleaners. I began to be scared that I was in for another long chronic spell. Considering the grief I've had with depressions, it wasn't a bright prospect. I kept asking myself, why can't the 12 steps work to release depression? By the hour, I stared at the St. Francis prayer. It's better to comfort than to be comforted. Here was the formula, all right. But why didn't it work? Suddenly, I realized what the matter was. My basic flaw had always been dependence, almost absolute dependence, on people or circumstances to supply me with prestige, security, and the like. Failing to get these things according to my perfectionist dreams and specifications, I had fought for them. And when defeat came, so did my depression. There wasn't a chance of making the outgoing love of St. Francis a workable and joyous way of life until these fatal and almost absolute dependencies were cut away. Because I had over the years undergone a little spiritual development, the absolute quality of these frightful dependencies had never before been so starkly revealed. Reinforced by what grace I could secure in prayer, I found I had to exert every ounce of will and action to cut off these faulty emotional dependencies upon people, upon AA, indeed upon any act or circumstance whatsoever. Then could I be free to love as Francis did. Emotional and instinctual satisfactions I saw were really the extra dividends of having love. Offering love and expressing love appropriate to each relation of life. Plainly, I could not avail myself to God's love until I was able to offer it back to Him by loving others as He would have me. And I couldn't possibly do that so long as I was victimized by false dependencies. For my dependencies meant demand, a demand for the possession and control of the people and the conditions surrounding me. While those words, absolute dependence, may look like a gimmick, they were the ones that helped to trigger my release into my present degree of stability and quietness of mind, qualities which I am now trying to consolidate by offering love to others, regardless of the return to me. This seems to be the primary healing circuit. An outgoing love of God's creation and His people, by means of which we avail ourselves of His love for us. It's most clear that the real current can't flow until our paralyzing dependencies are broken, and broken at depth. Only then can we possibly have a glimmer of what adult love really is. If we examine every disturbance we have, great or small, we will find at the root of it some unhealthy dependence and its consequent demand. let us, with God's help, continually surrender these hovering demands. Then we can be set free to live and love. We may then be able to gain emotional sobriety. Of course, I haven't offered you a really new idea, only a gimmick that has started to unhook several of my own hexes at death. Nowadays, my brain no longer races compulsively in either elation, grandiosity, or depression. I've been given a quiet place in bright sunshine.
Beautiful. So I was so grateful to find that letter. It's exactly where I feel, where I'm at. I really want to have right relations with man and God. I want to understand why, after 18 years of so much work and uncovering, discovering, discarding, that I have still have behaviors and feelings and situations that I'm not able to manage with. You know, the thing that Bill realized, that his emotional state was dependent on the outcome of his interactions with others, and that he was someone who wanted and demanded that he was understood, respected, and that he could control and have the people around him make him feel a certain way. From a very young age, we decide what we want and who we're supposed to be. And that's supposed is how we continue to live our lives and demand that everybody around us and that we operate in a way that fulfills that should of who we should and what we should be. Early on in his childhood, Bill made a decision that he wasn't good enough, and he conjured up an idealized image that if he became that, everyone would love him, unwanted, unloved, and alone, and so that everything we do is in order to make people love and approve us, if we can assume that most of us do come from that feeling of not good enough and looking for love and wanting to feel part of in the world. This is not an intellectual process. It involves feelings, and we do have to sit and tolerate some of the feelings so that we can get to these awakenings. He asked questions what was going on in his life and outside of his awareness. And so the things that we have done so much in our recovery up to now is we have many awarenesses of the character defects that we have. There are so many things that we've had to let go of that have not worked in our lives up to now. And most of us are honest. We can meet our commitments. We can show up. Our lives are more manageable. And we have principles that we can follow as a basis of living an honest and sober life. Unfortunately, or fortunately, this is what's happened for me too, is I've become aware of these Mr. Hydes that Bill speaks about, that are the underlying things that have been dominating my behavior and the way that I operate in the world that I'm not aware of. And so the things that he had to do now was to go and excavate and to see how he related to the things that he was not aware of. Some of the things that I am not aware of, because so these are the things that are running our lives. So everything that we do, every situation and basis are the hidden Mr. Hydes that we don't know how we're operating. And he's urging us in this letter to get in touch with the phony aspirations that we have. So I was a person who had no self. It wasn't about a phony self or phony aspirations. I come from a background where my mother, my family said that we don't have needs. This wasn't about someone whose needs were not met. I was told that I don't have needs. I disassociated very, very early on because of traumas that happened in my life. My dad died very young, and I left, severely left, and took on the persona of anything that I could that could make me feel comfortable and so that I could operate in this world. The biggest part of my addictions, and I have many, and I'm in many programs, food being the first one, was deception. So I went into this fantasy world and deceived myself, and even in what I was eating, everything about my abstinence was about deception. And so I took on the persona of anything. I got very politically involved. I belonged to a movement where we wore a T-shirt that I identified who we were. And I was told this is who we believe in, this is who we like, this is what we do. And when I needed to know, I would ask how we responded to certain things and how we felt about certain things. I continued to do that in every aspect of my life where I became whatever you wanted me to do, and I could make other people's dreams come true. I know exactly what you need, and I set off to have a career that was to make other people's, to be of service, and to give you the life that you wanted. As many of you know, my greatest thing is to tell you what you need in your life, and I can, and I've certainly become good at it. I've certainly, this is what I do. When I went to another program and I had to sit in a situation where they said, look, your life is manageable now, you've got what you need, you're financially secure, your abstinence is under control, and you're not in any bad relationships, what is it that you want in your life? Who is it who you're going to be? What is the person and who are you going to be? And I completely dissolved. This is where I was sent into, I spoke about this I think at the last workshop, where I went into severe trauma and had to take care of so many of those old issues that when I was confronted with that kind of thing, that is where, so, one of the hidden things are, when I'm ever confronted with, what do you want, where do you want to eat, do you want to go tonight or not, I go into immediately into a panic because I don't know. So if other people will make those decisions, I haven't known, so my life is dominated by that feeling. I feel unwanted, unloved, and alone. That means that when you don't invite me, I feel excluded. Now, I don't mind if I am invited, because then I can stand in my maturity and I can decide whether I want to go or whether I don't want to go. When I'm not invited, I paralyze. And I get into a feeling of absolute abandon and feeling left out. And one more time I've proved from a kid, when the kids ran away from me, hid in the bathroom, that I still have translated that throughout my life. If I, I understood that, when I once told a friend that a friend... Listen to this whole, it's such a nonsense story. But what happened was that I told some information that I shouldn't have. And the reason why I told the information was because I didn't know that I could hold, I thought that if I knew something, I had to tell you. I didn't know that I could make the decision that I didn't have to tell you and that I didn't have the inordinate responsibility to share anything that I knew and that it was okay. So I didn't share it because I really wanted to share it. I shared it because my understanding of the world is that I can't have information and not give it away. And, you know, I've had severe sexual issues my whole life because I was used sexually. And I therefore think, I'm 55 years old, I haven't been in a relationship for 10 years. The last relationships I had, which were 10, I was abused as a child. The last relationships I had for 10 years and 10 years, I was used. And so I don't believe that I am someone that anyone would want for to be in love with. That I know that I could be used, I certainly know that. Now that I don't want to be used, I don't know how to have a relationship. So these are the uncovering things that are the things that I now have to look at, that are uncovering now, where I see that these are not just the basic, do I lie, do I not, do I show up, do I not, do I steal that or do I not. These are the things that are now dominating whether I am true to myself and how the lengths that I've gone to become a person so that I can create something that you can see, that you can like, and that I can fit in the room, in the world. When that doesn't happen, first of all, I demand it. I really, really need you to give me what I need so that I can be who I want to. And I have to make you and manipulate you so that you can give me what I want. If you don't give me what I want, I've got another tack, which is to people please. So now I will come towards you and give you everything I can, so that that will be another way that I can get you to give me what I need to become the person that I've created for you. So for me to be accepted by you, I have to become the person. So now I will do whatever you want me to do so that I can be the person that you want me to be. And if there's another way, that if I'm not going to do this, then I'm going to leave you and I'm going to go and isolate and I'm not going to be involved in this relationship with you. So these are the ways that I will, and then the substances that I've used and the things that I've done, so that I can tolerate what it is to not be true to myself. And so these are the things that, as Bill W. said, he got completely depressed about, because he couldn't make it work. And this is what happens in long-term recovery. For some reason, when we're in early recovery, we still think we can make it happen. There's a certain point in our maturity and our long-term recovery where we get to see that we cannot control it anymore. How many times do we need to do it over and over again when we cannot make a sponsee do what they want, what we want them to do? Our relationships are not operating. We have better relationships and we cannot make the person do what we want them to do. There was one of the stories where people said in love relationships, in marriage or whatever, where we'll say, if you love me, then you would. And if you love me, then you'll know what I need. If you love me, then you'll know what I need without me asking. And if not, I'm going to manipulate, demand, people please, so that I can get it. The understanding of that is to really think that that can make anybody prove that they love us. So that they, what an inordinate thing that it is to give someone that responsibility. What happened too when Bill went into studying this thing, he had his big spiritual awakening, which was dependence. So I think that my greatest, my biggest disease out of everything, my ism, is codependence. And that means that I don't know that I operate separate from you. That I believe that I came into this world connected, and if I don't feel connected to you, then I'm alone. So I have operated, everything that I do is in relation to you. So I have had these, first of all the dependence. He actually knew that the word was dependence that didn't give him emotional sobriety. That if he wasn't going to be able to differentiate, if he wasn't able to individualize, he was not going to have right relations with other people. And that meant that he had expectations of other people that they could never meet. He had expectations of himself that he could never meet, which was perfectionism and all the things that we expect of ourselves to be what we could never be because we have limitations, and so do other people. But this dependence, first of all, as you see, we had dependence on substances. It's the first thing we had to break, which was the dependence that we had, that the substance was going to give us everything that we needed. Then this was the dependence on people, places, property, prestige, anything that we could have that was going to fix whatever we had that we were having problems with. That we had to demand, and we were so dependent on what you could do for us and what the world would do, that if I had that prestige, if I have your cooperation, then I am going to feel okay. And when that doesn't happen, we fall apart. It is our defeat, and therefore comes our depression. And that's where the emotional falling apart comes, when we cannot make that work. Once again, we are talking to people who are, I am talking to people myself, where we are at a stage of our recovery where I can see, I have the intellect to see that this isn't working anymore. I am not managing to operate making people do what I want them to do. And I'm absolutely getting a new awareness and awakening that if I don't understand these concepts of live and let live, which means to truly let another person live their lives, and that means to focus on my own life, then I cannot operate in this world because I'm still believing that you perceive the world in exactly the way that I do. That I have different experiences and a different view of the world that you do. Even as you're listening to this, we're all hearing it in a different way. We all have our cultures where our parents and our things also said, this is what we should be, and this is what needs to happen so that we can be liked by them. So we had to be a certain way to be liked by our family. We had to be a certain, and they had a certain way where they had They were undifferentiated, and they knew that this made our family. We could not do something different, otherwise we would be undifferentiated from our family. And the thing was that we had to be a family. That's the same as our religion, the same as our cultures, the same as our beliefs. But we have to believe the same as everyone else, because if we are undifferentiated, if we differentiate, then we stand in a different way. To start to understand that that is maturity, that maturity is going to come from when we are not dependent on anybody else, and that we can be self-supporting by our own contributions. That we need to be able to give ourselves whatever we need so that we can live a life that we can manage. And that if we are dependent, we will always be depressed, because we will never make it work. So then comes the work to see how we can not be dependent and how we can do what we need to do to stand in ourselves and to start to identify who we really are. So the shoulds are, if you ever want to know who your false self is, then just write, which we could even do while you're sitting here, is write all the things that you should. If you write without thinking, I should be, I should do, I should be, I should do, you will find out who your false self is. Because as soon as you should do something, it's not coming from your authentic self. So the thing that we start to do is to break away the shoulds and to see how we can be authentic, to be true to ourselves, to thine own self be true. And that journey to find out who I'm going to be if I am not dependent on you. And and where, what I'm talking about. Another thing that Bill said was his dependence on the 12-step programs. And this is something, too, that we have done, where to not be able to look at the discomfort that we have and to address these certain underlying things that we're so scared to look at, we have hidden that in our recovery, in our spiritual paths, and in our health to say, I can manage that. I know how to do that. I'm working the steps. I'll just turn it over. And on some level, that has been a facade and has really worked for us in recovery. In the early recovery, these are things that we have to do. We have to follow direction, and we have to be able to turn everything over. We still will turn everything over. But the truth is that if we're doing that, to manipulate and to not be able, under the guise of spirituality, to not be able to look at these deep things and to be able to look at the Mr. Hyde and to use spirituality to say that we are so grown and elevated, that we can use that as a way to not look at what we do, and we depend on our 12-step programs to make us feel all right as well. I don't feel okay because of my sponsor. I don't feel okay in the rooms. This program doesn't work for me. I've been doing this for so long, and it hasn't fixed what I need. And so, therefore, these things don't work, because I'm dependent on the 12-step programs to give me this emotional sobriety and to make me stand on my own 2 feet. There's a certain point where we have to practice these principles in all our affairs, and we have to accept that we want to have a new experience. And that means that we're coming to everything with all the knowledge we have, and we want to have a new experience. The other thing is how to have life on life's terms, which means that we can't fall apart when life happens as life is supposed to happen. These are things that we have to sit and learn to tolerate so that we can get to the other side, because only where we see our spiritual life is when we get through to the other side. When we're in this tunnel, when we're in the blind faith, we can't see the light. We don't know how it's going to happen. And life happens in all our recovery. So we all know, everyone sitting in this room who has some time, we've had sickness, we've had death, we've had breakups in our relationship, we've had life. And the thing that happens is that we need to tolerate that so that we can get through this experience. Only when we get through the experience and we see what happened at the end of the experience and we have the awareness, then we can see how God worked in our life and why that happened. I had a tremendous experience in my gift in my life that changed me forever, and that was my diagnosis of breast cancer and breast cancer treatment. And the reason why that was such an extraordinary experience is because, number one, I'd never been present in my life. I had, as I said, used every possible dependency and every tool, even in every stage of my recovery. And I can do this in such a sophisticated way that no one will ever look at me and see that I am caring so much, where I'm hiding my self-loathing and I'm hiding my insecurities and I'm hiding my feeling left out and I'm hiding all the things, because I know how I worked this for a long, long time. And so now I have not been present because I can obsess about something that can take me out. I can turn on and off my Facebook page. I close it. I open it 10 seconds later. I close it. I open it 10 seconds later. I can do this over and over and over again. And I can use anything I can where I know whether I'm using and whether I'm not using, whether I'm present and whether I am sober and abstinent. And this was the very first experience where I was present in my life. I was completely here for whatever that experience was. And I was able to take care of myself and be fully aware of the decisions I was making, the choices I was making, who I needed in my life, who I didn't need in my life, the boundaries that I needed. I had guidance, obviously, with a sponsor who helped me to see what would happen if I spiraled into despair, and that if I did go into that despair, I was not going to manage this experience. And she did say that she couldn't help me to get out of that despair. But what I did, was able to choose, was to feel everything that I needed to feel. I felt sadness. I felt fear. I felt sick. I was sick. I was angry. I had so many experiences that I did in that present time, that it's not an experience that I need to actually really talk about. I talk about that with no emotion. I can talk about my sexual issues and that and where I am with that with so much more emotion, because I've still got to do so much work around that. I can talk about breast cancer as if I can talk about a car accident or anything that happened in my life, because I worked through it all the way through, and I tolerated everything that I had to so that I could have the experience in the moment and don't have to deal with it later on. I've done that so many times now because of that experience. And that is the thing that helps us, is the experience that we have that we now have to translate into other areas. You know, I'm going to sort of end this as quickly as I can so that we can talk about these tools of emotional sobriety. There are a few things that I wanted to share that are not new. The first is the serenity prayer. So if we talk about emotional sobriety, then the serenity prayer for us takes on a whole new thing about what we did when we were in first recovery. First recovery, grant me the serenity. Please, 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 can I get through this meal? Please let me just change so that I can be sure that I can eat these three meals and I plan and prepare my meal. They're very different things that we have to know when we use the serenity prayer. That things are like uncomfortable for me, can we just say the serenity prayer so that we can center and get back? The serenity prayer for me in emotional sobriety is very interesting because it says, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. So I wrote the acceptance prayer, although we all know it. It's on page 449 in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book. And this is what it says, and I don't know what is different in this prayer that we read all the time that is different to what Bill said about emotional sobriety and what we're talking about in emotional sobriety. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it is because I find some personal place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my compulsive eating and say that I'm a compulsive eater, I could not stay abstinent. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world, as what needs to be changed in my life and my attitude. Brand new piece of information. The second thing is the courage to change the things I can. So the courage for me is a higher power, because I cannot do this. if I'm not saying, please help me? And that does mean the fellowship, my sponsor. So I have to know, which I do after all these years, my sponsor has shown up for me forever. I do not have to doubt that. I have had the experience over and over that I have been guided and supported whenever I've needed. If any time that I'm in a situation that I'm feeling uncomfortable, I can go to a meeting. I have never gone to a meeting in that situation where I haven't walked away feeling better. If I get hold of some people to talk to and share honestly, there is always something that I receive that I can hold on to. I have principles in my life that if I can go back to and answer any question or any dissatisfaction with my principles, answered by the principles, then I can have a guide for living that will always support me. So I have the courage because of those things. If I go out of these rooms, I don't have those things immediately. I never had courage. I always knew that I had to manage these things. And the terrible, terrible fear and nightmares that I had when I was driving drunk or in a fresh or feeling fat and had a broken leg in a big moo-moo and they put a pink cast on my leg and I just, that total demoralization didn't make me feel like I had courage to change the things I had. There is no way that you can do this work without thinking there's going to be change. And so change is constant. Change is motion and movement. It's going to happen all the time. If we can't flow with that and have blocks that are, and these deep blocks that are stopping us from letting the flow come through us and letting our lives go according to God's will, then we are blocking the flow, which is where the emotional pain comes. So as long as we can lift those things and be comfortable with change no matter what it is, and it's inevitable, and really accept that inevitability. So that's what maturity is. We can't still be thinking it's not going to happen. We have experienced change so many times throughout our recovery that we cannot still be saying things are going to stay status quo, that things are going to be complacent and I've arrived. If you haven't seen how many times one day makes a difference to another and to see how that feeling, that emotion changes, then we are still in the denial and still in the pain of wondering why we are depressed and where we are getting that imbalance. And then the wisdom to know the difference is something that we have too. We have experience. We have experienced things where we have done things differently and had awakenings where we know what the consequences are if we do this and what the consequences are if we don't, if we do this. We're aware of it. We've done it so many times when we know the difference when we make a call. We know the difference when we just let it go. We know the difference when we work on a resentment. We know what happens. We have those awakenings that as we have an awakening, it changes us forever. It shifts our consciousness and our attitudes and our behaviors forever. We've experienced it. So the only way that we can have this wisdom is from experience. The amount of times that we share from what somebody else said or what we think intellectually or what our opinion on what you should do is totally different to when we've had the experience. That's our wisdom. That's what we get here is some wisdom. And we have many, many more resources than we think we have. And we're not, as I wrote somewhere else, we're not as fragile as we think we are. We can manage things. We have the resources and we've done it. And we get to think we're so fragile. One of the very first things that my sponsor used to tell me is not having sleep is not dangerous. When I get this absolute panic of I haven't slept all night, and she'll say you'll sleep tomorrow. It's just the stuff that we get. We have the resources. We can manage tired. We can manage hungry. We've done this already for so many years. If you're not going to get your dinner at 6 and you eat at 10, it's okay. How many times have we had a meal late or we didn't get what we needed, that it's been all right? We've got to get to a place where these, and this is from our experience. It's not because I still think that I can't manage without a meal. I've done it over and over where if I haven't got what I've needed, I've been okay. And so that's where we are, need to acknowledge that we do have some wisdom. We are people who've been in recovery. I've had 18 years. Bill W. was at 21. There are many, many of us that have been doing this work forever. And this is the work that we like to do. This is not a punishment. My love is recovery. I want recovery more than I want food. I want recovery more than I want drugs and alcohol. I want recovery and freedom from the bondage of self and this emotional way that I'm operating with other people much more than I want anything else. Freedom from the bondage of self was the hook that I came into this very, very first, how was my very, very first program. Because the bondage itself is where my emotional opposite of sobriety, my being out there is for me. I know the complete difference when I am free from myself and when I can get out of myself, which is what he shared about, Bill, about how can I comfort rather than be comforted. Until I know who I am, I can't let you know who I am. Until I can love myself, I can't love you properly. If I love you because of either you going to accept me or not accept me, and I don't just take you for who you are, just accept you as a person and not somebody who has something to give me, just a person in your own right, a person with your own mind and a person with your own thoughts, then we can come together as two independent people and can have right relations. The other things I wrote here, the one was, if you can see, I wrote here that Bill W. asked psychologists to evaluate the alcoholic, and their conclusion was that addicts were childish and immature. And so what I wrote here was not about what makes us immature, it's what makes us mature. And so on top here it is what, the list is a mature person, and I'm going to just go through these quickly. Is concerned with the facts, which means that we don't get into overwhelm and into denial. We come back to what the facts are, and that is always even how we handle abstinence. Is it on the food plan? We don't have to go into the long story. It's just what are the facts. Goes by experience rather than belief. So it's not because I believe that if I see a black cat, it's going to be bad luck. It's these beliefs, these beliefs that have and these behaviors that have dominated my life have to become true to me. Who am I as what I believe in? And that doesn't mean it's my old mother's saying or the superstition that came from or the tradition. What am I going to believe, which means that I'm going to stand up different to my friends and have the courage to be who I am and to be this true to myself, which is going to make it so much easier for all of them. Because what I've made them and demanded from them so that I could not be who I am. Because if I am who I am, then they know who they're dealing with. Relies upon his reason rather than his emotion, using his resources wisely according to realistic needs and demands of the situation, which is that we don't give more than we can, we don't eat more than we can, and we don't eat less than we can. Weighs the situation carefully before drawing conclusions, which is not to be impulsive, which is so immature as in must do it immediately, can pause and take a minute to consider the situation, lives in the present, which means that we are not either in the future or obsessing about the past, is open-minded, willing to learn and explore, considers other possibilities, and considers alternatives, which is not our black and white thinking, which is if I am supposed to be this person, if I am on a mission to do something and I have even a vision that I want to achieve and I have the blinders on, that I am so focused on just this vision, even if it is the thing that I think is going to be the greatest thing that I could ever achieve in my life. And as soon as I take down the blinders, we can see left and right. We can see the horizon and everything that is so abundant and so bigger than our imagination and beyond our wildest dreams. So the limits that we have when we are trying to control who you are, how I see things, where I'm going, what I want, doesn't open us to who you really are, what you are, and that I don't perceive you in a certain way. And I don't allow you to define me by the way you perceive me, and so that I can become who I am, and you can be who you are, so that we can have a real relationship. That we know our limitations. You know, I recently did a job. How long time? 5 minutes till the workshop's over? Oh, okay. Sorry. That we know our limitations is that I haven't been working for a while, which has been absolutely glorious. I have really had an incredible year where for the first time in my life I've done exactly what I wanted to do. This has been such a gift that I was given with relation to my codependency that I've never experienced in my life from a child to 55 where I've done exactly what I wanted to do. Every day, whatever I want to do. I woke after that and did a big project. And I, there were so many moving parts and pieces. The first thing, and then on the last day, I was driving to the hotel and I was talking to my sponsor. The night before, I had tried to eat something and it dropped on the floor. It fell all over. I scooped it up, and my hands were shaking, and I tried to eat it, and I was stuffing it in my mouth. It fell on the floor. I scooped it up again. So everyone said, what are you doing? So I phoned my sponsor the next morning driving to the place and tell her, my hands aren't working. I'm feeling very flustered. I'm very out of it. And she said that it's adrenaline. And adrenaline isn't good for me because I'm a drug addict. I am an addict, and that adrenaline spirals me out of myself so quickly, and that it is something that isn't good for me. So we talked about these things. Hungry. I had been on this job where they serve the kind of food they give to everybody, the mass amounts of food and the cheap food that they give to feed everybody. I tried to get what I needed, so I went to get 2 cups of milk for my protein. And I put it on the shelf in the hotel. Someone took it and threw it away. I'm now trying to load buses with executives to get them on the buses, but I'm trying for someone to run to the bar to get me my drink again so that I could have something, because I knew that I was only going to get back at 2 o'clock in the morning, and so I'm hungry and I'm not getting the food that I need. I'm lonely because I haven't spoken to a friend. I haven't talked to anybody. I haven't been to a meeting in days. Angry because these people are really not validating who I am. And as they are not validating me, I start to lose myself. When I am myself and I'm standing over my feet and I am here in the room and I am true to myself, I am the person that I know that I am on the job, I'm actually fine. As soon as they treated me in a certain way and I'm affected by this, I start to lose myself. The minute I start to lose myself, I start to get out of control, and I really am behaving in ways where I'm high and hungover and whatever that might be. And I am tired. I haven't slept for hours. So the conclusion for me now is this a job that I can do? This job always is hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I've done this for 40 years, however long I've worked. The length that I've gone to maintain this, where I'm not only managing the moving parts and pieces of the job, but I'm also managing myself, because I have a chemical makeup, a personality. I have limitations and needs that are not the same as everybody else, and I need to take care of them so that I can show up for this. And the length that I've gone, the relationships that I've had, the tears that I've cried, the anxiety that I've, this immense anxiety that I felt, where I have had such despair on the job trying to maintain what's going on. I'm now in a situation where I don't know if this is a job that I can do. And there are conditions now that I have in looking for a job that have different requirements. If I'm going to be emotionally sober, if I am going to live a life where I can regulate myself, then I can't be dependent on them to not to validate me, and I can't be dependent on them to give me food, and I can't be dependent on them to make sure that I sleep and give me the hours. I have to regulate myself because I know what I need to be a sober and emotionally sane person. So we need to be flexible, spontaneous, and have a healthy sense of self. Bill W. said that after doing this work, he was into the bright sunshine, which is a lovely saying that I like. These are the things that he said towards getting emotional sobriety. Take an emotional inventory. Where are you getting hooked? Who is the Mr. Hyde that is operating in your life? Bill started to get honest with himself and to start to look at the shoulds in your life and see where that is limiting you. Stop letting people define our reality. Other people's limited perception of us does not define our reality, nor does our limited perception of them. Stop taking things personally. Love the saying, if you want to be personal, then you have to stop taking things personally. Don't project onto others what we cannot look at in ourselves. Take responsibility for our own maturation. Don't give your emotions special privilege, which is where I've often, this is where I've been helped so much, where I often am someone who doesn't dwell on the feet. We do have to feel our feelings because we're never going to get to the point of Mr. Hyde if we don't know that that is something that brings up a feeling. We do have to look at the feeling. When we give our emotion special privilege, which is, I can't do this because I feel so bad. There are certain things that we have to do to not get into that despair, because if we're in the despair and see the world as without any hope or that there is no light at the end of the tunnel, then this is going to be very hard for us to do. We come into these programs and we get the glimmer of hope. We come into these programs after years of recovery, we understand that there is an underlying feeling of well-being. We are all right. We've done that over and over. We've got to know that by now, that we are underlying all of it. If we get honest, if we really get honest and not what we project or our fantasy of finance and romance, if we actually look at how we are today, we're all right. And we have a higher power that when we turn to that, we do have, every single time we get out of our way and out of our dependence and out of anything, the most extraordinary things happen that are beyond our wildest dreams. I have these awarenesses that I want more of. That is it. It's very, very hard to me. Not very hard. It's very easy for me when people say to me, why are you still in this program and can't you do moderation? And it's how to explain that I've had these awarenesses that I want more of. How do I say I eat this just because of these extraordinary things that happen where I have an awakening that shifts me forever? We bring to bear at this moment all the resources we have to adapt and cope. We do not sell ourselves short and treat ourselves as fragile. We are much more capable to deal with life on life's terms than we ever give ourselves credit for. We learn to soothe and comfort ourselves when we are hurt and disappointed. Better to learn to comfort ourselves rather than to hurt ourselves or to manipulate others. This is one of the things that I dealt with when I was working on trauma, that I have many things that I now know how to self-soothe. The majority of stuff that I used was to soothe myself. That's what I did when I ate. That's what I've done when I have acted out in any way, even if it is the Facebook on and off. But there are things that I've learned that I can soothe with. I like to rock. And so when I rock, it is soothing. I know that. It's something that I like to do. I like to do jigsaw puzzles. When I do jigsaw puzzles, they completely take me into such a wondrous place of just looking for the piece. I look and look, and I can completely shut everything else, and then I have that moment where I find my piece, and I put it in my jigsaw puzzle, and that's what makes me feel good. I like to be with people in program. And so when I go with people in parties and big crowds, it's funny that I work with big crowds, but the reason why I work with big crowds is because I don't know how to be in big crowds. So I'm always the person managing the big crowd so that I don't have to do the small talk and the cocktails and meet and greets. I'm not a good person who does that. My best thing is to be with my five best friends and lying around and letting the children play. I'm starting to learn what my limitations are and how to soothe myself. I really like the things like the hot baths and a magazine that is mindless or watching a series through and through. And so these are the dependencies that I have that soothe me. And I love to hear when someone says, why don't you do this? Because I do take that direction, which makes me feel good about myself and can help me in those moments. And obviously, we don't do it alone, which is the greatest thing that I have had. When I was sick and my hair had fallen out, and I would sit in 12-step meetings, and I would feel people look at me and want to tell me that it's okay, or I look great, or everything's okay, or they love me and praying for me. And the energy that would come at me in those times, I had to put my eyes down because it was so big. The love was so big that was coming for me. And my friends say that too when I am in difficult situations, and they say, oh, but you've got all those people. You've got your programs. You've got, I mean, and so? I mean, you could have this too. This is something that I have as a gift, but I've worked for this, and this is what I've chosen to do. You can have it. Everyone can have this support and fellowship. This isn't something that is exclusive to me. Anyway, I've talked for, rambled on. I hope that I didn't talk too fast and that you can make some sense of what I said. And I'd love, love, love to hear about your experiences with emotional sobriety.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm Rose Kopel-Theater, and hi, and I can't believe I'm standing up here going to talk about this now. Thank you so, so much. I can't believe. I feel emotional sobriety, and I feel like I thought I was a toddler in this program, but now I'm feeling like I'm an infant again. And I think it's a good thing. Because I heard so much of what I needed to hear, and you spoke not just to my soul, my heart, my being. Emotional sobriety, I feel like I had so many episodes of indulgence, and I have come to realize in this program, because of this program, just really how self-indulgent I am, not just with the food, with my anger, with my emotions, with my expressing them. And this program has been nothing short of amazing, and I come to discover more and more about it, and it's so much greater than what I thought that it was. And I am amazed every day that I pick up a book, or every day that I go to a meeting and I hear something that somebody said, some gem, some nugget of your truth and your reality, which I can identify with and relate to. And I just want to thank everybody for your service, for your participation. And I'm so grateful. I came in kicking and screaming, and I certainly didn't want to do this, and it's been years in the making. And I thank God that he led me here again. And and at this time, I chose to stay. So, thank you.
Hi, I'm Connie. I'm a compulsive eater. I came into this program last fall after 27 years in another program, and I told myself to be a beginner, you know, so I really started CA How as, I know nothing about CA How. I needed to learn as a newcomer. And today, I'm thinking how much the 12 steps and 12 traditions have changed my life, because I've been in this, around the tables for almost 30 years. And thinking about emotional sobriety, and when we've been in recovery a long time, it looks like she just came into the world fully formed, like this transformed person, right? You know, how do I get there? And I've had people say to me, you never have trouble, you know, why are you always so stable, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, it's the program. So what I'm thinking about today, as you were sharing, is for me, in long-term recovery, it's kind of messy, and there's this simultaneous thing that happens where my old self is in here along with my new self. And they're not fighting necessarily, they're trying to cooperate. we'll see. The other day, I was driving, and I leaned back in my car, and my head hit the headrest. My head is like, ow, ow, what's going on in the back of my head? And I had what you know is like just like an ingrown hair, you know, it was like, what's going on there? So I had this simultaneous moment of like, oh, that's an ingrown hair, and it's a brain tumor at the same time, you know. So what I wanted to say is in recovery, I could just be in that moment and be like, that's so funny that, you know, I'm a cancer survivor, you know. I took it seriously when I had that moment. But it was a moment, it was just a real moment of like panic, but, you know. So then I watched my brain tumor for 2 days, and then this morning my partner was like, how's that tumor? I'm like, oh yeah, forgot I had that. Right? So I was thinking about that when you were talking, that it's not clean, it's recovery is messy and sloppy and joyful and all kinds of cool things. And I'm just really so grateful to have had that reminder and be among people who are just trying to get better. We're just trying to get better. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Vera. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict. Hey, thank you so much. That was, oh, yes. And that's what I wanted to talk about. Before I came to program, everything was no. No, I can't do this. No, that takes too much time. No, no, no. And when I heard that serenity prayer, all I wanted to know was, when am I going to get the wisdom? You know, I got the courage. I came here. I got the courage. And I accept other people. And I got the serenity. I can sleep now. But when am I going to get the wisdom? So a sponsor told me, when you stop asking. So I had a little resentment on that. When I stop asking, so if I literally stop asking, will I get this wisdom? And that's the level of my maturity at that time. The wisdom came really slow, and it comes today because I sponsor. And it's always the sponsees that give me more wisdom in life than I could ever have. And I gradually began to say yes to a lot of things in my life. I said yes to things at church that I thought I never could do. I said yes to Reiki. I thought I'd go take this Reiki class one day, never thinking that I would end up teaching Reiki and become a Reiki master teacher. That's where this program brought me. I participate with a group, and I do Enneagram studies. Never thought I would do that one, and I'm in advanced Enneagram studies, you know. This program works good, and it works in all areas of your life. And I will so be ever grateful to the man that started the 12-step programs, Bill W. That happened to be my dad's name, Bill W., you know. There are no coincidences in this program. If you're here, you're supposed to be here. And like I said to one of my groups, I am sure many of you will be here as long to be at my funeral, because this is my home, this is my group of people, and this is where I finally said yes to a lot of things in my life. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sandy. I'm a very grateful recovering compulsive overeater. Hi. Okay. I don't know my own strength. Thank you, Sue. I love you. And I when you shared about, you know, when you were going through that time and people just prayed for you and looked at you, and it really touched me, because God, we all go through such challenges. You know, life is a roller coaster, and we're all on the ride. And if I'm abstinent, then I have a chance to live the best life that I can possibly live. And I just want to talk about emotional sobriety. When you said that, I had to share something that happened to me recently. This program has given me so many gifts. I pursued a creative career for 7 years, which I wouldn't have done, but I did because the program has taught me that I have to take actions, and like if there's something I'm afraid of, I need to do that and walk through that fear, and so I did. I pursued something, and recently, and so for the last 5 years, I've been working for a nonprofit organization, and I have a person that I in our office. There's only three of us, me and the other two people, and this new guy that's been there for about a year now. He goes through these rage episodes and berating, and I haven't always known how to handle that, and I previously had done, you know, I pick up the energy and then I give the energy right back the way I'm being received it, and that doesn't really work very well. And so the other day, I'm the office manager. He wanted to use the credit card, my credit card that I was assigned recently. He wanted to use it for something he was charging or we were charging, and it's okay that this be charged. He wanted me to go to his computer and use it on his computer, and I wasn't comfortable with that. And I actually, this time, I said, when he wanted me to do that, first he started saying, well, I doubt you know what you're doing, and I doubt this, and he was yelling. And I said, please don't yell at me. And then I said, I'm not comfortable with this. And he just, like, I mean, he was, you know, it was like, and then I walked away. I walked back to my office. And that was so empowering, and I could not have done it if I wasn't abstinent. I really could not. And because my whole body was shaking, you know, it's the hardest thing to say what I mean what I say, and not say it meanly, and not to, and you know, we're all so sensitive. It's like I pick up people's energy, and I sometimes just throw that energy right back at you. And so I walked to my office, and the next day he came in and apologized. And that's not what has happened in the past. I can just tell you that. And I mean, I have no control over what's going to happen, and I love that part of your share also. It's like, I am powerless. I am powerless over people, places, and things, and I can't control anybody, anything, or any, you know, anyone. So anyway, that felt amazing. And I have noticed, I've been around programs since 1980, and I have recommitted abstinence since January 1st, 2013. And I just noticed that, and welcome to any newcomers that could possibly be here. You're in the right place. And I just noticed that every day I get a little better, either physically, mentally, or emotionally, or spiritually. I mean, these things are just happening, and I kind of try to be quiet about it, and I just take it in. It's like it's happening, you know, and it's God doing for me what I can't do for myself. So thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm recovering from compulsive eating. Thank you so much. That was really, really tremendous, and I love this worksheet. Yeah, I've been working on a couple of areas. I'm working through a pretty major resentment, and what I'm seeing as I work, what really struck me when I looked at it is stop letting people define my reality. And I'm really resentful at the way I was treated yet and the way that I perceive that this person views me. But what I'm really mad at is of taking that on and allowing her perception to be how I saw myself and how I subsequently treated myself. And I'm really in the process of taking, I mean, I can intellectually take responsibility for that. It still hasn't sunk down at the emotional level, but I'm praying every day to really, really own that, that I allowed, not even allowed, but that, you know, given who I was at the time, that's how it affected me. But it's really up to me to put up the boundaries and not let other people define my reality. So let's see, the other one, the don't take things personally. I recently had a good experience with this. I recently joined a new 12-step fellowship where finding a sponsor is a true challenge. And I committed every day to make, you know, a minimum of one outreach call and attempt to find a sponsor. And I did this for quite a while. And many times, you know, people would not call me back. And I was really getting resentful about it and taking it personally when obviously it's not. They have no idea who I am. And what I got back when I took this to my meditation was that it's absolutely none of my business whether or not they call me back, that my job is to simply make the call. I mean, maybe they lost their phone, maybe the message got deleted, maybe their mother died, maybe they're working 15 hours a day. Who knows? It's none of my business. Or maybe they don't like me and they don't want to call me. Even that's not my business. You know, so, and I do have a sponsor finally in this program, but, you know, I really had to, and I was able to really let that go, let just completely let go of the results, and my job is only to take the action. And let's see, the other, I don't know if it's specifically on this list, but the other thing I'm learning to do is to consistently do things whether I feel like it or not, because a lot of my life I let how I feel dictate what I do. And a successful life for me doesn't work if I do what I feel like doing all the time, that's for sure. Anyway, thank you very, very much.
Hello, people. Excuse me, I'm a compulsive overeater. my ass was sore. Thank you so much. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
That was so good, like so juicy. Thank you so much. You know, I was sitting in here, and when you were first talking about what this workshop is about, I started thinking to myself, I thought, should you even be in this room right now? Like, are you really prepared to be emotionally sober? And then I thought, self, you have spent a lot of years in this program going up and down 100 pounds, like maybe 30 years working on this in a 12-step program. And I do that so that I don't ever have to do that. You know, it's playing that game of getting it, losing it. I get 6 months, I lose it. I put on 100, I lose 50. I lose a bunch, I'm looking good. I put on some more. I play this little game with myself because I don't want to have to show up like that. Is that for me? You know, I just have to, like, pull my covers right now. I just feel compelled to say, you can do it. Thank you. I just feel compelled to say, like, I really see the game. You know, it gives me the excuse to sit on the sidelines and not have to show up for life like other people in the rooms are. And I want that. I want to do it all the way. I just keep telling myself it's a weight problem, or it's a compulsive eating problem or a binge problem, but it's really a life problem, and that eating is just because I don't want to show up like that. And so I want to just out myself. I want to stop playing the game. I want to stop pretending that it's just a food problem or a weight problem, when really it is I'm afraid. I'm afraid of a lot of stuff. But I don't want to be my whole life. I don't want it to be about being in the struggle. At some point I want to get there, you know, and so I do deserve to be in this room. I do deserve to be in this workshop, and I'm ready and willing to do the work, and that scares the crap out of me. Thanks for letting me share.
Lindsay, compulsive eater, bulimic. Thank you so much, Sue, for what you shared. Your experience is admirable, and you know, when I first came into program, there was so much static in between my ears that I couldn't hear what anyone was saying, and then my heart couldn't hear what anyone was saying, and because I was so isolated in my own head of what I thought I was wrong with me, of what I thought my life should look like, of who I thought I should be, and then denying who I was while I was in the rooms and trying to figure out how I was going to get out of my disease or get out of being in this room or get out of the feeling I was having by sitting in a room of addicts. Because I'm uncomfortable and I'm afraid. And I don't know how to take care of myself. You know, at a very young age, I learned that if I don't know how to get my needs met, I'm going to be perfect, and that's how I'll just survive, or I won't tell anyone what I need, and I'll just be self-sufficient. And so that isolates me from the rest of the world. And I either stand in the world and I'm frightened, or I stand out of the world and I'm okay, but not really, because I'm not connected. And, you know, I heard so many good things today about, you know, the sense of self and taking responsibility for oneself. You know, I recently started doing trauma therapy, and the therapist said to me, you know, we're not responsible for our disease, but we're responsible for our healing. And I really heard that. And, you know, I came into 12-step program, like, so emotionally dependent. Like, are you going to meet my needs? Are you my mom? Because if you're my mom, then I'm okay now. Then I can stay in this room. I can stay in this program. I can stay in the, I'm not going to kill myself. You know, I'm okay. And when I stopped looking for that, when I stopped looking for someone else coming into the rooms with an agenda versus just like being in the rooms and being present to experiencing what it meant to feel like an addict, the healing started to happen for me. I started to feel connected. I started to calm down. I started to be okay. And I no longer looked for the next person sitting next to me to be okay. And that took so much time, and I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just really grateful for 12-step program, and you know, for people who share their experience in what their disease looks like in the rooms and how they got where they are today. So thanks for letting me share.
I need a compulsive overeater, bulimic anorexic. Sue, thank you so much. It really resonated for me to, you know, for the first time in recovery, I've been dealing with some serious depression. And, you know, just I am someone who, like, I get it and I run. I used to say in early recovery that I always, I had this idea of life that it was a series of graduations, and I was like, scared. Like after I finished undergrad, I was really scared. There's like a picture in the pictures that I share in the rooms of me and my graduation, just like, oh shoot, I don't know what's next. Like, what's the next graduation? And I've done that with like my spiritual growth. And I heard that loud and clear in your share, Liz, that our spiritual growth doesn't stop. And you know, and on the one hand, I am in this place in my life where I'm experiencing emotional sobriety beyond my wildest dreams in the work situation. And I think Sue heard me share for years and years and years about this boss that I have. And that I work with this group of, with some people that you just don't know what you're going to get from one second to the next. And whatever you've been working on may be great or may be horrible, depending on their mood. And, like, I'm completely astonished that I can show up and, like, today, it just, it doesn't, I'm centered, I'm in God, God is my employer, and he's got me there for some reason, and it's just like, I'm really centered, and then I have the struggle on the other end with like, just struggling with this depression and wanting certain things to happen in my life, and I think what I heard loud and clear today is that emotional sobriety is that spiritual growth that just doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. That's why we keep coming back. And I'm grateful to be here, and I'm going to keep coming back.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. I'm a compulsive eater. And I just wanted to thank you, Sue. Oh, my God. I my brain, it's just about, like, there are holes in my brain. You know what I mean? But all I know is when I saw the topic, I knew I had to be here because I know this is a part of my recovery that I just, I haven't been able to, like, even say this is what's been missing. I haven't been known, I just didn't know how to address this. I would see myself act out, like I would see these Mr. Hydes. Usually when I pull into my driveway, you know, I can sort of keep it together, you know, and in some other areas of my life. A lot of times when I pull into my driveway and I deal with my boyfriend, I've shared about this, but it's like I just go, you know, I become another person. And it's really funny because we survived I think a 12-day vacation together. Really. And there were points when he was saying to me, do not tell me what you do. Like it was a huge, like, you know, billboard. And I didn't even realize that I was doing that. I mean, I've been together with him forever. How he puts up with this, I don't know. But my awareness is changing about this. You know, I'm able to see myself more clearly. And I think it's from sponsoring. I think it's because I'm sponsoring some more people. I don't know what it is. You know, I'm not sure. And it's the other things that my sponsor is going through that is, like, so meaningful to me that she's, the things that she's sharing to me.
I don't know what it is, but all I know is I need this in my recovery. I need to take this into my recovery, and it's like what I need. You know, it's like, you know, I didn't even know I was thirsty for this, but I know I need it, and I just am so happy that we're all together. I'm happy to be here, and I'm so happy that Sue was able to share all that she's gained.
Thank you all very much. What I wanted to say that I hope what was translated in some way, that this is not where we get to self-flagellate ourselves on how we behave with other people or whatever. The only process, and this is something that has come as a part of this same emotional sobriety, that if I'm going to continue to beat myself up for my limitations, then I'm never going to be able to look at these things. So I came in from the very first day and said I'm a compulsive eater. I came in on the very first day and said that I have obsessions and compulsions that affect my life. I come in saying that I know that I'm affected by the actions and reactions of other people, and that I have used substances to survive in the world. I come from a lot of learned lessons that I have translated into all areas of my life. And so the only way I can do this is with loving myself so that I can love you. And this truly is something that I always said. But this is not supposed to make you walk out of here. This is about our love of recovery and those of us that want to have right relations with man and God, more than the average that could be beyond our wildest dreams. So we are choosing to go into this so that we can have what the experience that is promised here for us. This is not something you have to do. You can go tomorrow. This is something that we're choosing to do. So we don't do this by going on, I'm such a mess up again. Because this is not where we're at this point in our recovery, where we're actually saying, I've got still some blocks that are separating me from right relations with man and God. That's it. I want to keep removing these blocks so that I can have the sunlight of the Spirit and to truly be happy, joyous, and free, which is at a certain point in our lives where we actually say, I want this new experience. I've done all this work so that I can have this great life and not be fighting with my friends and still be operating in a way where I know better. And so I want to do that. I'm just going to end with this thing that I'm meant to read, which is what Bill W. said too, is sobriety, abstinence, is only the bare beginning. It is only the first gift of the first awakening. If more gifts are to be received, then our awakenings have to go on, and we find, bit by bit, that we can discard our old lives, the one that didn't work, for a new life that can and does work under any conditions whatever, regardless of worldly successes or failure, regardless of pain or joy, regardless of sickness or health, or even death itself. A new life of endless possibilities can be lived if we are willing to continue our awakenings.
Thank you very much.